Our speaker this morning is no stranger to many of us. It's Vincent Murphy. Vincent is a Regina-based workshop and keynote presenter, entertainer, and story performer. He has presented his art for a wide variety of audiences of all ages at many venues throughout Saskatchewan, across Canada, and overseas. Welcome, Vincent.
Good morning, everyone. Oh, you could be a little more cheerful than that. I know it's the day after St. Patrick's Day. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, that's it. It's nice to know that you're taking in and expelling oxygen here at some level, so we can all join in what we have to offer for today. Well, as they say in the carnival business, perhaps you might remember, if you're of a certain age, if you go to the fair, the exhibition, or the carnival, they used to have those little sideshow tents with the man who ate light bulbs and the dancing girls and all of those review programs, and he'd be up there, "Step right up, folks! Here is the big show!" And they would do all sort of interesting things to compel you to come in and watch the show. Well, today, I thought perhaps we could take a little bit of time to step right up and learn about one of the biggest events ever, and a celebration, I suppose you might say, or an observation. And, well, there was St. Patrick's Day yesterday. That was a big observation, a big celebration. So I would guess belatedly I wish you all a very happy St. Patrick's Day. But that's not what we're going to talk about this morning. Perhaps Easter is a big celebration coming up for some people in the culture, and I'd say, nay, no, it's not Easter. A birthday, perhaps somebody celebrating a birthday, but I would say, nay. There's three of them there, because that's not what we're marking today. Amazingly, there is something that goes on that is absolutely vital to our continued existence that hardly ever receives a moment's notice. It's an essential, I would say, about life and living, and it might be described as, I know one thing, it's water. That's an essential, but that's not what we're going to talk about today. You can live without water, they say, for 3 or 4 days if you really wanted to work at it. The other one is food. There's an important thing. You can get along without food for, I don't know, maybe 2, 3, 4 weeks if you really want to work at that too. Air and oxygen, that's something else. That's something we can celebrate. That's a very important thing. I don't know, how long can you hold your breath? Good luck. He's a Navy man, eh? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was a submariner speaking there. 3 or 4 minutes if you're really good at it. Tax. There's something that we can celebrate, I suppose. That's something that they say it goes along with something else. But I don't want to go along with any of those things at all. I would like to introduce something that's absolutely most vital to our continued existence, and it barely receives a moment's notice, and that is sun. Sun. It's our single source of support. It's the what I refer to as the 8-minute miracle. It takes 8 minutes for the radiant heat from the sun to arrive on our planet and affect our life here totally on our little blue ball. And we're even with one small degree of change in temperature of the sun, or one small shift of its orbit in the galaxy, our little blue ball would become an ice ball, or maybe a boiling ball, depending on our trajectory away or to the sun. So there it is. It's there all the time, whether we see it or not. We perhaps see its face reflected in the moon, but it is always and constantly part of our existence. But who cares? Whoever even notices the tremendous significance of this very natural and what we call a normal cycle of sun throughout the seasons of the winter solstice and the summer solstice in June, and now approaching the vernal equinox and the autumnal equinox in September. And here we are now, this morning, on the 18th of March, 2012, on the very verge of the spring equinox. This is a bridging time. This is what is referred to as 50-50, fair share, when the day and the night share the stage in equal terms. This is the time when, after this time of the equinox, when the dark gives up to the light and the light gains more of the day. We ride along in this little speck, resident on our tiny little space ball that we call Earth. It's called Earth in English, by the way, but it's called other things in other languages. A spinning and whirling little ball that's wobbling its way through the vastness of the universe. And as we spin, we're doing about 1,060 kilometers an hour here at our location in Regina. And as we whirl around sun, we're doing about 108,000 kilometers an hour. That's fairly significant. That's better than my old van does. And the sun, which is moving in this great mass of the galaxies, is moving along at about 1,332,000 kilometers an hour. I don't know who the hell figured that out. But if you put all of that together, we are really moving. And it to sit and to imagine that, to imagine the force and the energy and the dynamics of our little piece of space matter moving in concert with all of these other things. I wonder, does anybody share that information with their children or their grandchildren? Do you talk about it with your neighbors? When you go for coffee with the guys down at the mall, do you talk about the energy of Earth and this, of space and our place in the galaxies and so on? Or is it more about, radishes are three bunches for a dollar at Extra Foods. Wow, now that's something. That's really important. So who notices and who cares? I think for us in the northern latitudes, it makes a bigger difference. I've met and spoken with people who live in the equatorial regions of our little planet, and they're less affected by the tilt and the spinning of our little ball. But here in the northern climates, we are affected by the ever-varying tilt of Earth towards sun. And we live in this shifting of daytime and the lengthening of sun shadows and the shortening of sun shadows, the high summer and the low shadows, and the low winter and the long shadows. Did you notice that? The shadows are longer in the winter because the sun is lower on the horizon. Not many people pay attention to these sort of things, what with all the distractions we have in our life and our living. There's the imposition of what I would refer to as unnatural, supernatural belief. And there's also the effect of urbanization of many cultures that has removed us from the immediacy of living in the here and now with nature. So symbolically, this time of the vernal equinox also gives us thought to the balance of darkness and light, not only in the natural surroundings of the sunlight, but also in our own personal life. Interestingly, when you think about our ancients, I like to refer to our ancients as the people who came before us, perhaps before the recording of history even, where they left small symbolic marks of their existence and where we learn to discover more of them now. These are people who lived intimately within the pulse of the natural existence that was with them at their time. And therefore, they paid very close attention to the details of their existence. They wondered, they noticed things, they honored and they observed, and they learned very valuable life lessons. So let us pause here and take a look back to the time of our ancients and wonder and learn. So to go back would be, in the context of time, I don't know, how many thousands of years ago do you want to go back? But it was the earliest people, the ancient people who lived close to the land and to the wind and to the rain and to the snow, all effects of the varying tilt of the earth in connection to our sun. They became aware of both the subtle and the dramatic power of natural forces. They grew to understand how everything in their life, everything that surrounded them, everything that was, every part of every breath they took was connected. Their existence to all things was connected in this way. They learned how to survive the extreme climatic conditions in the northern latitudes. This was a place where adequate provisions had to be generated in the proper season and set aside for the winter season when there was a scarcity of resources. So they would observe this natural cycle of the sun. And it meant something. It was something important. They would gather around fire, and they would give expressions of wonder and gratitude and ceremony, not in worship, but as an awareness of the power of sun and the struggle between the powers of cold and dark and warmth and light. So they had this wonderful ability, which was generated over many hundreds of years, thousands of years perhaps, to notice what they noticed. We see a lot of things in our lifetime, and perhaps it's just a glancing blow with a reality. But other times, we're drawn to paying more attention. We may have a personal friend or a relationship where we treat it rather superficially until we realize upon the loss or some tragedy that this person was very near and very dear to us. We didn't notice that before. We didn't take time to notice what we had noticed. And so our ancients learned to recognize these patterns of light and dark, the night of the day, the darkest hours of the winter solstice, times of great concern for the early people because they had a great fear that sun would not come back. And as it was, and I think as it is becoming more prevalent now, people have an increasing awareness of these shifts of light and the different emphasis on the natural cycles, this very fragile balance that we have in our universe. And I wonder about the great legends that were created by these people as they sat around and told their stories about sun and light and night and dark and cold. If only we would notice these stories that are still with us. If only we could find and rediscover these stories. So I would think that if we were to notice these cycles of the sun and reflect on these as part of our natural, our own personal natural rhythms and balancing of our own nature. And we hear about this. Often you hear the expression, the balance of nature. And I don't know if I would agree with that necessarily. I'm of a mind that there is really no balance in nature. The balance of nature is to be constantly off balance. If you look at anything in a natural existence, it is a constant struggle. It's a constant shifting and correcting and adapting to an ever-changing environment. And so with all things in creation, whatever it might be in creation, there is this knowing and unknowing seeking of balance in our existence. So this time of equinox, it illustrates this balancing when day and night share the stage equally, but let's add a little caveat here in that it's also shared very temporarily. So how do we find this in our everyday lives? Put it in the context of how perhaps even subconsciously we have adapted to this realization and not know it. You ask someone, how is it going? And they, being bilingual, would say, oh, come see, come saw. People say that life is a balancing act. In any kind of a drama or performance or play, there's a protagonist and an antagonist. Baseball is a game of averages. Nothing is exact. It's a give and take. You may have heard expressions like, oh, well, you know, win some, lose some, sooner or later, one way or the other. Everything matters, nothing matters. Perfection and impossibility, yin and yang. You take the high road, I'll take the low road. I met a woman in Melfort one time. She was telling me about her mother, and her mother had an expression. She said, well, whatever happens in your life, you can put it here or you can put it there. And she said that was the best lesson, the best wisdom that she'd ever received in her whole lifetime, telling her that she had a choice of how to deal with the various things in her life, good or bad. There's another one, the angel and the devil, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Sunrise, sunset. Mazel tov. Or as the Irish would say, the orange and the green. Have you noticed that they're painting the street grates downtown with the green paint? These are the drains that go into the sewer, where the water runs into the sewers. They're painting them all green. Somehow I'm offended by that. I think at least they could do is paint them orange and green. Even in our human anatomy, if you look at our balance, for the most part, we have a left and a right. We have a left foot and a right foot, arms, legs, hands, ears, eyes, nostrils. It's all part of our balance. And when we walk, as things are in opposite, when we walk, you put your left foot forward and your right arm back. And you fall over. Right? Because this is how we balance. We go the opposite way when we're walking. And the brain. Let's not forget the brain. The brain functions as an interchange of cause and effect. Effect and cause. Cause and effect. And somehow this mysterious ability of our, what is referred to as the right creative and the left logic, and the transfer, the constant transfer of billions and billions of informational pieces over the course of a day, provide us with this duality of our being that provides us mere mortals a way to seek and define ourselves as we struggle along on this meager undertakings on this coil of life. So there are things that in balance that challenge and even threaten us. There are the physical challenges, of course, to our well-being. My dad had an expression about things like that. And if it wasn't balanced, he would say it's out of whack. Now, as a child, I was trying to figure out what whack is. Because if you're out of whack, you don't have any whack. But I learned later, he described it to me later, is that it means that you're off balance. So there have been, and there are, and there always will be, different aspects of the human condition that throw us off balance. I'd like to give you some illustrations of that, if you don't mind. Well, I'll give them anyway. I'm here. One that disturbs me is what I refer to as pigeonholing. Now, we were talking earlier about doing English language tutoring at the library, and sometimes it never ceases to amaze me how these expressions, when they're given to people who are learning English, it just absolutely gobsmacks them. They have, like, what? Pigeonholing. And you see the imagery goes up in their head of pigeons and holes. And what are you talking about? So then you're required to explain it. And the wonderful thing about doing this kind of tutoring is that you learn more about your language and your expressions because you have to actually sit down and think about what they mean. And they have tremendously powerful implications, like pigeonholing. So we do this by race. We pigeonhole people by color, by religious belief, economic status, education. We pigeonhole people by age, I don't mean by ageism of elder people, but right across the whole gamut. If you call someone a teenager, there's all kinds of implications around that. But now we have boomers. This is the big deal. And we have Generation X and Generation Y and Generation Why Not, I guess, and Generation Z or Z. And then where do we go? Do we start over at AA now? Or how does that work? There are new definitions now. I read about this recently about what do you call people who are living longer? Long livers, perhaps. But you can't call them old crocs anymore, or cronies, or whatever it may be, crones. Apparently, this is documented, 65 to 74 years of age are now called the young old. No kidding. And 75 to 84 are called the middle old, and the 85 plus are called the old old. My God, if I may use that term, what is the world coming to? I thought perhaps we could just put it in the same category as cooked meat. And if you're in the first range, you're rare. And if you're in the middle, you're medium. And if you're 85 and over, you're well done. There are a lot more of these whacks, these things that knock us off center, such as it appears that we have in our cultures here this need to express our existence in terms that are defined by other people. So we live our lives through other people's expectations. And then there is the famous, what is referred to as the manufactured desire, the Madison Avenue marketers who command our conspicuous consumption. There was an advertising campaign several years ago that the theme was for the person who has everything. And somebody had scribbled on the bottom of one of the ads, what do you get for the person who has everything? And they scribbled on, penicillin. The other aspect of knocking off center is the, I want it all and I want it all now. I think that would depend on how you defined all. Is it my duty as a citizen of North America to have it all? Having it all for some people is synonymous with success. Then we add the conundrum here of having to define success. But if you were wanting to take your triangle and bring it down to a smaller size, having it all can be simply being comfortable in your own skin, as they say. Having peace of mind. Having it all is all relative to what your needs are. If you are suffocating, having one more breath is having it all. And then we have those exhortations that come out of, I don't know where they come from, but people say, you have to live your life to its fullest. That's a threat to me. That's scary to me. What does that mean? There's a lot of pressure to be and do something that's vitally impressive. You have to swim the Pacific Ocean or climb Mount Everest. And perhaps it might even be important when you read that he lived a full life. Well, who doesn't live a full life? You're born, you live, and you die. And that time in between is full of something. It depends on what your life is full of. It has to be full of something. It could be full of joy, but it can't be full of joy all the time. That's unnatural. It could be full of anger. Hopefully it's not full of anger all the time because that's unnatural. That's also very unhealthy. Does your life have to be full of achievements? All of the time, constantly achieving? At what cost? Achievements at cost to your family and personal relationships, perhaps. Or maybe your life is full of family and personal relationships at the cost of achievement. Or maybe family and personal relationships are your achievements. So this balancing that goes on in our life is so much similar to what you hear and see in the natural form, such as in pessimism and optimism. Optimism has the potential to be a great enemy of happiness. Pessimism has the potential to be a great enemy, pardon me, a great ally of sorrow. I heard the story of a gentleman who was asked the difference between ignorance and indifference. And he said, "I don't know, and I don't care." Another one of those whacks that we take is what I refer to this morning as an information overload in our current culture here in the North American culture. We are overloaded with sources of information, demands to respond to a billion bells that are ringing all the time. This instant information requires or demands, expects instant response. An instant response creates a lack of balanced thought and consideration. Did you ever get an email from someone and you sent a reply back right away and then you took a look at the reply in the send file and realized, why did I say that? That's not appropriate. I didn't give that much thought, but there is an expectation that you have to reply instantly. And the media has created this frenzy. If you listen to the radio, for example, they're constantly giving you the news. But it's the same news over and over and over again. They just keep repeating the same thing, but they've created this monster that they have to feed. So they just feed it, you know, the trivialization of really important news. At one time when you listened to the radio, to the news, it was news. But now they're leading off with trivial stories about the size of somebody's sweater that plays football for a team in Hamilton and how his sweater size has changed. Oh, that's very important. So with this feeding its frenzy, what are those fish that rush and eat everything very quickly? What do they call them? Piranhas, yes. The piranhas of the media, they're constantly chewing away at things and trying to create stories and create interest. But it's not only just radio, it's also the frenzy of television and the internet. There's this rush that we have to learn everything right away, we have to know all of these things. And so much of it is totally irrelevant. We of the iPad culture. It's like a tsunami of information, this info sea, these waves that come crashing over us every morning we wake up and have to face this information. Cable TV, internet, text, tweet, face page. I often wonder, my grandfather, Joseph Murphy, he passed away in 1932. I wonder if he were to arrive here today and have a cup of tea with me and I had to explain all this stuff to him. What would he say? He would probably just shake his head and say, "Well, Vincent, I think we should have a cup of tea." I guess that's where we would find balance, sitting around the coffee, the tea table, and having a visit. So, with that, one more, and that is the seeking of the impossibility of perfection, where somewhere, somehow, we were told that we must be perfect, and we must achieve perfection. Perfection, to me, is always around the corner. It's always over the next hill. And how can you expect perfection to be achieved when you look at the natural source and the natural cycle in our existence where everything, everything is constantly changing, adapting, modifying? And so goes the continuum with our darkest day in December, followed by this ever-increasing light that we now enjoy, followed by the coldest weather in January that then brings a soft touch of spring upon our cheek. And with the equinox, we can rejoice in the lengthening of the day and the victory of light over darkness. And yet we know it is only temporary. We know that, as we know in our life, that the brightness of our life will someday be dark. And we know, and somehow deny, that in 90 days, from the 21st of March, we will come to the summer solstice, and the days will begin to shorten. Isn't that a terribly depressing thought? And so it goes, my friends, with the yin and the yang, and the give and the take, and the win some and the lose some. And as my friends in England say, what you lose on the roundabouts, you make up on the swings. Now, this is all kind of intangible in a way. You wonder, how can we put this in a frame of something we can actually do and see? This is what I do. If it's a clear day and a sunny evening on the 20th, the 21st, 22nd, anywhere in there, it doesn't matter, I invite you to join me to come down to 13th Avenue at Albert Street. And if you stand there and you face the east to the Affinity Credit Union building, the sun is aligned with 13th Avenue as it sets. And it will hit the Affinity Credit Union building with a blast of light that will come back and it washes over the entire intersection. It's an amazing sight to see. Who notices? Or if you go down to Dewdney Avenue and you go out to the west on Dewdney Avenue, you see the sun lining up exactly with Dewdney Avenue. And then go a little further down Dewdney Avenue to the, what we used to call in our family the Cutacross Road at Grand Coulee. And if you stand there in just the right place to see sun setting and hitting the SGI building in Regina, and this great beam of golden light is coming washing west across the prairies. It's a particular Grand Coulee phenomenon, this golden beacon from the island on the prairie. So there are some thoughts about reflecting on our ability to recognize this natural phenomenon and adopting it to our own personal life, seeking a balance. And remember, this is a teeter-totter. And when you've ever tried to balance on a teeter-totter by yourself, it's a matter of constantly adjusting your weight and your position. So I'd like to thank you for being with me this morning on, I guess we could refer to it as a whirling journey. And I invite you to, if you have any questions or comments, to present them for me. This balance that we have is based on our perspective, I think. The perspective of being an eight-cylinder word, meaning your point of view or your way of looking at things. And if you want, or if you can wish, you can ask, am I viewing my life experience with a closed or open mind? Are my expectations compatible with my sense of being in comfort with myself? Are my expectations realistic? Am I being too cautious or even pessimistic? Or am I being overly enthusiastic or even too optimistic? A man had two boys, twins. They had reached their 10th birthday. One of the boys was always whining about things, very pessimistic. The other boy was very optimistic, had a very bright look towards life. And so on their birthday, he bought presents for them. And after they had their birthday cake, he took the boys outside and he said to the pessimistic boy, all of your presents are in the garage. Open the door. And the boy did. And there was a bicycle and a baseball bat, gloves, some new shoes and so on. And the boy looked at the bike and he said, well, it's all right, but I don't like the color. And it really, that isn't the kind of seat I wanted, but I guess it's okay. And that glove, that isn't the brand of glove I wanted. I wanted a Cooper glove. I guess I can use it, but any chance I could take it back? And he just whined his way through everything that was in the garage. So after that, the optimistic boy said, well, Dad, he said, where is my present? He says, oh, he said, your present is out in the shed in the backyard. Because this boy, you see, had been looking for a pony. Bugging his dad to get him a pony. He said, wow, maybe I've got a pony. So they all ran to the backyard, and he opened the door, and there in the shed, it was loaded to the top with horse manure. Right to the top. And the boy said, Dad, where's the shovel? He got the shovel, and he was just shoveling his heart out. And the dad said, what are you doing, son? He says, well, you know, Dad, with all this manure, there's got to be a pony in there somewhere. So perhaps in all of this that I've given you this morning, you may find a pony in there somewhere. You just may have to keep on digging. I wish you well with that, and I thank you for being with me this morning. Thank you.
questions and comments?
Don't be too hard on me now.
Thank you, Vincent. I appreciated this very much. It just hit the spot.
Thank you.
As you were speaking, I realized how many aspects of balance that you actually introduced and how deeply you must have thought about this in preparation. And I had this little thought. Okay, so if you've thought so much about all of these things, how balanced does that make you? Or do you fall into these times when you're not so positive and all that?
Absolutely.
Despite the fact that you have thought deeply about this stuff for a long time, obviously.
Well, part of that is knowing. If you don't understand why you are off balance, then you will never be able to achieve any sense of equilibrium. But if you understand where these things are coming from, the source of them, the validity of them, and it's one of the things about that people are afraid of is perhaps in introspection and going into the dark parts of their lives because they fear going in there. And this is a tremendously disempowering sense of ourselves. But if you take the advantage of knowing that I can go in there safely and investigate those things and be safe in there and see how valid they are, it will help you overcome that sense of darkness and you bring light into that place. So, but that's a constant that never stops. If I'm ever get perfect, shoot me.
Well, Vincent, I come from Lumsden, and this presentation, is pretty complicated. I mean, I don't know if you've been from Regina to Lumsden, but it's pretty flat, right? In Lumsden, we're convinced that the earth is flat, and I don't know what this is that you've been talking about today.
Well, David, having been to Lumsden, I know that to get to where you are, you have to kind of drop off. So I would suggest that once in a while you come out of the valley and see the sun. But I know you're a rascal.
Touché. Vince, just a very simple thank you for your gift in being able to blend insight with humor.
Thank you.
Yeah, Helen said again. My question to you is, if we get early spring in north of the hemisphere north, would they get late autumn down south?
Who invited him? David set you up for that question, didn't he? I saw him hand you a note. Well, that's a meteorological phenomenon. But the cycle of the sun within... The interesting thing about the cycle of the sun is people... I had a little presentation I did one time, and there was an elder from one of the First Nations communities up at La Ronge. And we were talking about change. And I offered the impression that things are... Nothing stays the same. And he said, well... He said, the sun rises every morning, but the sun rises in a different place every morning. Even by a small degree, it can be measured. And you must realize that sun is consuming itself. I mean, they don't go to Walmart and buy briquettes to stoke up the sun every day. You know, the sun is actually consuming itself. So if you hang around long enough, it'll basically turn into a cinder, and that's it. So this is the kind of like, people say, the regularity of things, it's quite fragile, really, in the big context of our existence. Did I dodge that pretty good? Thank you.
I thought you were going to say, I don't know what I don't care.
I didn't want to offend you, so... touché.
Just bringing it back to the here and now, I know yesterday there were flocks of geese every, I would say, 2 minutes. Huge flocks. I'm wondering how many people did notice. I was lucky enough to actually go out of town and did go down that big dip into Lumsden, but then up on top of
Don't refer to David in that way, by the way.
But it is a wonderful rejuvenating sight in our small period of time.
The wonderful thing about geese is that they let you know that they're coming. It's a big deal. If geese didn't honk away like that, they would fly over, and very few of us... I watched the same geese in Regina, flying over Regina yesterday. And it's a wonderful thing. It's a harbinger of the new season arriving. But the fact is that they make so much noise about it. It's such a glorious expression of our existence. But again, on a balance, we know that they're going north. But we know that in 6 months, they're going south. So there's a cycle. It's the same. Everything's tied into that wonderful cycle.
Vincent, I had a lot of, just a ton of interesting stuff in that talk. One that I picked up on was about noticing our language, because I can think of two short incidents. One is just sitting around with my granddaughter drawing pictures, and I said one day, "You're really going to town on that." And she said, "You know, it's you say going to town, but we're not really going to town. It just means you're busy with it or something." So she's thinking like that, you know, five-year-old thinking about what phrases mean. The other one is there's a guy at work who's a new immigrant to Canada, just got a citizenship from Poland. And very often in meetings, somebody will say something, "Let's cut to the chase," or something like that. And I say, well, you know, does Adam understand what that means, cut to the chase, or where it comes from? So I'll explain the idiom, whatever it is, some kind of sports idiom, and people will say, "Well, I didn't really know that." You know?
Yes.
Yeah, this kind of stuff.
We use this expression. Are you familiar with cut to the chase, where that came from? No, actually, the expression, and these are very interesting, because when you delve into these things, but cut to the chase, when they were making silent film, they would film different scenes. And if they had a particular scene that was getting perhaps a little draggy or boring, they would cut to a chase scene. So they would, if you had something going on, they would. If you watch these early silent films, there's always a car chase, a horse chase, something going on. So you would say, "So get to it, cut to the chase." That would be the big excitement. The big ending would be the chase scene. So, but when you say to children nowadays, you say something like, "Well, hold your horses." What? No. Always behind like a cow's tail. What's a cow? I know I'm being a little silly there. But.
One more person has indicated they'd like to speak, and I think maybe we can have this as the last person.
Hi, Vincent, and everybody. This is my first time coming here. And I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed what you had to say. I was laughing and enjoying everything.
Thank you.
I felt like you scratched the surface on so many really important issues that I feel could talk about for hours. So, you know, everything from the changing seasons and how that makes people feel and how that relates to our lives, to being bombarded by media and all these different priorities and everything that you'd said. I was getting so excited about each of them, and then we didn't get to talk about them in detail. So I guess I'm challenging you to continue talking about those things and to go into more depth with them at some point. I'd love to be around for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vincent.